So do you need a permit to carry a protest sign at the state capitol or not? We'll get the latest on a crackdown and then an easing of the enforcement of the rules on protests at the state capitol last week in this edition of our State Capitol Report. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, September 10th. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, will bring us up to date on that story and much more in this first half of our state capitol report. And then after 7:30, we are going to talk to a guest briefly about the Chicago teachers' strike that started this morning and the issues involved there. We'll talk with a guest who is the education beat columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel after 7:30. And then when we will hear from a guest from the Wisconsin ACLU on the state capitol protest policy as well. First, Sean Johnson is with us. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So what's going on at the state capitol? People are getting arrested and then they're not.
Yeah, there were arrests. There was quite a few arrests on Wednesday and then a couple more on Thursday of last week. And those happened on days when there was a permanent event in the rotunda. And, you know, backtrack for a minute. We have a new chief of the state capitol police right now, David Irwin, and he has said that, you know, he's going to be more aggressive in enforcing the rules of the building. And it came out in media interviews and made that point. And so last week there was a permitted blood drive in the rotunda of the Capitol, and there were several protesters arrested for holding signs during the blood drive. Now some of these, I mean, they weren't, you know,
they weren't protesting the blood drive.
They weren't throw the bums out signs or anything. Some of them were holding like we love the Red Cross signs. I mean, they were there to make a point. And one gentleman I talked to was holding a copy of the Constitution that you can get at the State Museum next to the display of the state Constitution. So, I mean, they're very much there to kind of, you know, to make a point here. And so you had these arrests on Wednesday and Thursday. And then on Friday, you had this weekly gathering of the Solidarity Singers in the Capitol Rotunda. These gatherings have been, you know, somewhat smaller as time has gone on, especially post-recall. But with all the arrests, you had a pretty large crowd there on Friday. A lot of people wondering what was going to happen. A lot of people holding signs to try to, you know, drive home their point, including Brian Standing, a gentleman who was holding a sign that on one side said, "I'm holding a sign," and the other sign said, "Arrest me." And here's what he had to say.
Rights are like muscles. If you don't exercise them, they get flabby and useless. And this is an opportunity for us to exercise those rights and make sure we still have them.
He was not arrested.
He was not arrested. I mean, mm-hmm. It was a light police presence. You know, there were Capitol Police around the rotunda, but as there always are, you know, at any time of the day and the noon hour. So
what do we know? Do we know why no one was arrested at the Solidarity Singers gathering on Friday, but a dozen or so people were arrested on Wednesday and Thursday at, for instance, the blood drive?
I don't think we know for sure. I mean, just speaking for myself, a call to the Department of Administration on Friday wasn't immediately returned. And, you know, generally they don't comment on why someone wasn't arrested so much. But as to that question, why were they arrested on Wednesday and Thursday and not on Friday? We can't say for sure. There are a couple of things that we can kind of, you know, hypothesize. One, there was a court ruling that was handed down last week in a case that was unrelated to these arrests last week, an older case involving some protests last year and enforcement of DOA rules, Department of Administration rules, by Capitol Police. And in that court ruling, the judge spoke to whether or not DOA can enforce those rules for someone holding a sign versus displaying a sign, you know, standing it up on the Capitol floor. I think like some of the signs you'd see during the holiday season in the rotunda, for example. And
so the judge was making a distinction between a permanent or erected display of a sign and someone actually holding a piece
of
paper in their hand.
Right. Or, you know, again, there are a lot of signs out there. There were some that were just blank to prove a point last week. And so that ruling, protesters felt like kind of, and you know, you can talk to the ACLU about this, but they felt like that really kind of bolstered their hand. Another factor, though, that you had on Friday that you didn't have the other days, I believe, is that there was not a permitted event in the rotunda. So this chief has said when there's a permitted event and you have protesters who have not scheduled their event in the rotunda, we're going to enforce those rules and you can't have those going on at the same time. There was no blood drive in the Capitol on Friday. And so it could be that there was, no clashing the rules as this, police chief saw it. But we don't know. I mean, it's sort of guessing at this point.
Yeah. So do we know this week if people will be arrested if they walk into the Capitol with a sign without a permit?
No. I mean, I can't tell you exactly what's going to happen this week. I would, watch and see if there's another permitted event in the rotunda. I would watch on those days.
We will talk more about the policy on protests at the state capitol with Chris Amity, the executive director of the ACLU of Wisconsin, coming up in our next half hour of the state capitol report. He is going to say that arresting people for having signs without a permit is a violation of our right to free speech. That's coming up probably around 7:45, because we will be talking about the Chicago teachers' strike after 7:30. We are talking with Sean Johnson, who is bringing us up to date on the latest from the state capitol. And we will also talk about the U.S. Senate race in Wisconsin and Tammy Baldwin's speech before the DNC last week and other issues involving state politics. And we welcome your input. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It's going to be a sunny, mild day today. Highs will be in the mid to upper 70s. Tonight, clear with lows in the 50s, and tomorrow, sunny and warm with highs getting into the low to mid 80s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, talking about the latest news in state politics. And Sean, we had a wrap-up last week of the big Wisconsin roll at the Republican National Convention. Might as well do the same thing, equal time for the Democratic National Convention. We just had Tammy Baldwin speaking before that convention. What did Tammy have to say?
Yeah, Congresswoman Baldwin was originally going to be given a prime time slot at the final night of the convention. It got bumped back, but she did get about a 5-minute speech in front of the Democratic National Convention, and she hit on some of the same points you've heard from her in this campaign. Several times, the idea that everybody should pay their fair share is one of those that she hit home. And she kind of framed the speech in terms of, you may have heard a lot about Wisconsin lately from Governor Walker, from Paul Ryan, but that's not the Wisconsin I know. And so that was how she presented this idea of the Buffett rule, which she sponsored, which would raise taxes on millionaires.
We believe that if we're going to prosper, everyone has to have a fair shot and everyone has to do their fair share. That's why I'm proud to lead the charge for the Buffett rule, which makes sure that millionaires and billionaires don't get to pay a lower tax rate than hardworking middle-class families. And President Obama is standing with me. But Mitt Romney wants to pass even more tax cuts for those at the very top. The Wisconsin I know knows that their plan will only bust our budget, not boost our economy.
And another point that Congresswoman Baldwin made at the event, she made it a point to talk about gay rights, and Tammy Baldwin is seeking to become the first lesbian elected to the U.S. Senate. And she's she's a very popular person within her party for that reason, and so important to Democrats for that reason. And in a year when, first President Obama and now other Democrats are being very, very much more outspoken in their support of gay rights. Tammy Baldwin said that the president praised the president for making progress toward equality.
He repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so that no American ever again has to lie about who they are in order to serve the country we love. Republicans want to write discrimination into our Constitution, but the Wisconsin I know believes that with each passing year and each generation, our country must become more equal, not less.
So, another point that she hit was her support for the financial regulations drawn up by the president to make it harder for, you know, hopefully harder for a financial collapse to happen again. But she touted her vote against a law that President Clinton signed in the late 90s that deregulated the banking industry. And she had company there from then U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, the point she made in the speech.
So did her Republican opponent in the U.S. Senate race, former Governor Tommy Thompson's campaign, have any reaction to her speech?
He issued a written statement and sort of in the same vein of Tammy Baldwin saying the Wisconsin we know. He said the Wisconsin we know, basically Tammy Baldwin's speech would be a throwback to failed government excesses. I referred to her as the most liberal member of Congress and, you know, criticized her vote for the stimulus bill. So, you know, a brief response from the Thompson campaign. You know, and really a brief speech from Tammy Baldwin. It's not like, you know, a big wind up to the president that you saw from some of the speakers that went before him. This is one of those 5-minute speeches, get on stage, make your point, get off, that you see at the conventions.
You know, Sean, I saw that there was some criticism of the Thompson campaign by supporters of Tammy Baldwin because the Thompson campaign put a video on its website, I believe, of Tammy Baldwin dancing at a gay pride event in Madison back in, might have even been in 2011 or 2010.
2010, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was Brian Niemoyer, who's the political director for the Thompson campaign, sent an email to selected recipients. I mean, it wasn't sent to everybody, but he had heard that Tammy Baldwin was going to reference Heartland values in her speech. Niemoyer sends out an email in his and a tweet saying, you know, quote, clearly there's no one better positioned to talk, quote, Heartland values than Tammy, and then link to that video on the, you know, the UW-Madison campus, I believe, where Tammy Baldwin is dancing with this band. And
by the way, the song was Wonder Woman.
It was, yes.
But anyway,
I
stand corrected. It wasn't on the campaign website, but they tweeted out this video.
Niemoyer says, or the Thompson campaign says, Niemoyer acted on his own, but there is a push by, you know, some Democrats that Thompson needs to answer for this, that the idea that he was acting on his own when, you know, Brian Niemoyer doesn't stop being his political director just when whatever he wants to. They say that Thompson should answer this and should apologize for the tweet. The Baldwin Hand campaign has not said anything, though, basically, you know, left it to others to discuss this.
So is that, do we know if that race is tightening up at all since the DNC, or aren't we sure in terms of the U.S. Senate race?
Yeah, we don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. We haven't seen polling on. I don't know that a DNC speech is going to give anybody any kind of bump, given the, you know.
And it was actually taken out of prime time and put in a little less desirable.
Yeah,
spot.
And it was on the. I mean, it was on the night when the president spoke, mm-hmm. And so it's hard to kind of break through those headlines when you're on the same night as you know, the keynote speaker for the whole thing. We just haven't seen any polling in very recent times to tell us what's happening with that U.S. Senate race. We know that the early polling we saw showed Tommy Thompson ahead.
Well, speaking of the presidential campaign, that seems to be heating up a bit right here in Wisconsin since Paul Ryan was selected as Mitt Romney's vice presidential running mate, I did see some national commentators saying, you know what, Mitt Romney's really going to go full press to try to win Wisconsin. What do you know about that, Sean?
Yeah, we don't know what their plans are. We got to remember, just because Wisconsin is a closely divided state, and just because, you know, Paul Ryan's from here, and it seems like, boy, they ought to be fighting it out over this one. This should be ground zero or something along those lines. When you're talking about an electoral map, they have sort of a math that they are looking at. And whether Wisconsin becomes highly important to the Romney campaign is really going to depend on what's happening in these other states that have, you know, X number of electoral votes and, you know, how many they need to get to victory. That said, there are signs that they are paying attention to Wisconsin, and they really being both sides. We have Paul Ryan, who's going to have a town hall style meeting in De Pere on Wednesday. Vice President Joe Biden is going to come back to Wisconsin. He's going to be in Eau Claire on Thursday. And we now have we know that Mitt Romney is running an ad in Wisconsin, a Wisconsin-specific ad. And it was announced last week that he was going to have an ad buy in swing states. Wisconsin wasn't initially on the list that was reported. I think it was by CNN. But now, he's doing an ad buy here. Don't know how large it is, how much of a presence he's going to have on the airwaves in Wisconsin. But he's spending some money in Wisconsin now, which you haven't exactly seen before. So in addition to those speakers, you also have the acting U.S. Commerce Secretary from the Obama administration is going to be in Milwaukee today to talk about tax cuts, U.S. manufacturing, investment to create American jobs. So, she's not working for the campaign, but when you see a secretary come in during campaign season, they're not going to say bad things about their boss. And so I think it's a pretty good sign, given the visitors we're going to have this week, that Wisconsin is important in their eyes.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter, Sean Johnson. During this, our state capitol report, when we try to bring you up to date on the latest in state politics. And there, speaking of taxes, there was a tax study committee gathering last week, and they were talking about tax breaks.
Yeah, and let's see if I can run through this fast before people's eyes glaze over. But it's interesting stuff. There's a study committee they set up at the Capitol to look at tax reform or reform of Wisconsin's income tax. And it's a pretty nebulous charge. You don't exactly know what they're looking at. They're not going to come up with a bill and vote on it at the end of the study session. But the study committee or symposium was set up by Budget Committee co-chair Robin Voss, a Republican of Burlington. He might be Assembly Speaker next year, and he wants to push an income tax cut. He's made that pretty plain, made it plain again last week. So you've got a number of tax experts coming in and talking about how they see the tax system, issues they see with Wisconsin's tax system. And you had this, interesting situation develop last week where you have these tax experts, which, I think you can say some of them skew slightly to the right, some of them skew slightly to the left, but there was this broad theme with all of them. They all talked about the need to close tax breaks, tax deductions, tax credits, saying that that's, you're picking winners and losers when you do that. You're not necessarily getting the government, you're not necessarily getting bang for your buck. So, one of those speakers was Matt Gardner from the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. And this is a group that favors a progressive income tax system, emphasizes what taxes do to lower and middle income workers, has been critical of Governor Walker. Broadly speaking, I would say skews to the left. They might object to that, but I would say skews to the left. And here's what Matt Gardner had to say.
No tax break should be sacred. All should be evaluated. And adjustments to tax rates, whether up or down, should be a secondary choice.
And so then you also had Joseph Henchman of the Tax Foundation, a national group that comes out with these tax rankings of the states every year, is much bigger on the role of that taxes play in economic growth. If you're going to put them on a scale, would be more to the right. And he said that, you know, tax incentives can be problematic.
I would say leave no sacred cows. Look at everything. That doesn't mean get rid of everything, but you should at least evaluate everything, whether it makes sense in the context of the tax system you want.
So a similar message from everybody who spoke there. Again, I don't know if legislators are going to go that direction next year if Republicans do push a tax cut, if they'll get rid of tax deductions, because you're talking about a pretty wide variety of tax breaks in that mix. I mean, some of them are fairly new for manufacturers, for, you know, agriculture, but some of them are, you know, one of the ones that was put in law in the last decade was on Social Security income. It's something taken advantage of by quite a few people. And so if you're talking about getting rid of everything, that will definitely get people's attention.
Speaking of taxes, yet again, what's this about Congressman Tom Petri not paying income taxes from 2002 to 2005?
Yeah, it's something that was first reported by the Associated Press last week. He's been a congressman in Wisconsin for a long time, and records show did not pay any state income taxes from 2002 to 2005. The Petri spokesman said that those were because of losses Petri suffered as an investor following the September 11th attacks.
All right. You know, we have just 30 seconds to go. Anything new on whether or not the state Supreme Court is going to get involved in the voter ID case?
Yeah, I mean, that's really a big question. As we head toward November, the Department of Justice and Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen wants them to. The NAACP last week filed a brief saying, don't get involved right now. Supreme Court, the appeals courts can handle this. And if you get involved now, that will create chaos at the polls.
Well, we will await your reports on that and other issues. Thanks very much, Sean.
All right. Thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. We will check news, and then our state capitol report will continue with a look at what's going on in Chicago and talk more about those capitol protests.